Okay, it's, I'd like to call the meeting to order at 9 o'clock a.m. Please, as courtesy to the rest of everybody else, please sell your, sign with your cell phone. Each director received notice of this committee meeting and public meeting notice will properly post as required by law. Presiding Officer Flores, Director Lattimore, Director Jared Smith indicated they would not be present for this meeting. Anybody else missing? Yeah, we're, at this point, we'd like to set aside time from, to hear from the, comments from the public, and there are no people wishing to comment, so we will go on to our first agenda item, which is report and possible discussion on fiscal year 2025 annual comprehensive financial report presented by Michelle Groen, Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, thank you.
Morning.
So first, just to talk about, what we call our, we like to refer to as our act for our annual comprehensive financial report, and the fact that we don't do it just to kill trees or to give our accounting staff something to do for part of the year. The main purpose is to provide our board of directors, our customers, our stakeholders, and any other interested parties with reliable financial information about the BRA in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles. It's required by the Texas Water Code. It's just good practice as far as being transparent as a government organization. We have our independent auditors who come in and perform our annual audit, and right now that is Baker Tilly. Their contract with us expires December 31st, 2028. So they'll go all the way through the fiscal year 28 audit with us. Some of the highlights of the document. It's a historical document. It's presented based on actual results for the prior fiscal year, whereas the budget or the annual operating plan is a forward-looking document. The budget differs from the ACFR in several ways. Depreciation is not included in the budget. It's included in the ACFR. Debt service principal payments and capital purchases are classified as expenses in the budget, but they're adjusted on the balance sheet in the ACFR. And the ACFR has three major sections. There's an introductory section. It just includes general information about the BRA. There's a transmittal letter from the general manager and our GFOA award, hopefully, for our submittal from the prior year. In the financial section, there's the auditor's report. There's required supplemental information, which includes management discussion and analysis, which is just an overall view and discussion of the financial statements and the BRA's financial position. There's a set of basic financial statements, and then there are required notes to the supplemental information. And then the last section is a statistical section. It's unaudited. And we try and put information in there that we think will just be helpful to the people who are reading the financial statements. We have 10 years of comparative data. We have our debt information. We list major customers. We have our schedule of insurance and other information in there. So if there are no questions about that, I'm going to turn this over to Aaron Worthman from Baker Tilly, and he's going to give a report.
Well, good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Aaron Worthman. I'm the lead audit principal, and pleased to present the fiscal year 2025 financial audit. So what I want to do first, again, is go through what's covered by this year's audit. I think I've talked about this in prior years, but we do have required communications with you, the governing body, that I have to go through. So year to year, unless there's something exciting that you probably wouldn't find positive, unless that's the case, these are pretty much standard presentations, right? We go through the required communications. I do want to touch on the impact of future audit standard changes and then open up to any questions you may have. So to give you some background perspective, our audit firm spends about 400 hours conducting the audit, and we audit exactly what Michelle's just gone through, your annual comprehensive financial report. And I'd say this year's audit, it went very well. I'd say compared to some other years we've had, it was a very straightforward year. If you look back at some of our other presentations in years prior, we've had some significant accounting changes that took a lot of work and time on management's part. That would have been, if you recall, the leases, changes to subscription-based information technology arrangements. But this year, the only accounting policy change that was required was for compensated absences. So management made that, adjusted that liability. The good news, the change in the policy wasn't material to the prior year, so we didn't have to restate the financial statements. So the change is just prospective, and again, it was an immaterial change, but it was the one accounting policy change we had this year. So we conducted about 3 weeks of field work. Our field work occurred October 28th through November 8th. Prior to that, we had the 1 week of preliminary field work. Again, the entire team was readily available, answered our questions, and we were able to stick to our audit timeline. So if we take a look at the audit and what we do, I say roughly about 30% of what we do is specific to internal controls. Most of which is in the information technology area, which I think you would understand is not a surprise, right? That most of our controls within our financial systems are all information technology based. So we have a certified information systems auditor that helps conduct that testing that works as part of our audit team, but that's 30%. So what we'll do is we'll look at your major processes, whether it be payroll, disbursements, fixed assets, things like that. We'll document what key controls need to be within those processes, and then we'll test those controls to make sure that they're effective. If for some reason we find breakdowns of controls or lack of controls, we'll warrant additional substantive tests, which I'll talk about in a bit, towards those areas. But again, this is 30%. 40% of what we do then is what we call our substantive testing. That would be, you know, the nuts and bolts of our audit, if you will. It could be looking at your bank confirmations and tying your investment and cash accounts out to those external bank confirmations. Taking a look at your fixed asset purchases and tying those out to the invoice. But that would be 40% of what we do. And the remaining 30% is specific to financial reporting and planning. We do use specialist reports for ADP and the Texas County District Retirement System. What we do when we look at those specialist reports is we'll look at the findings that were tested from a different accounting firm, test those reports. We'll look at those to make sure, again, that we can rely on the controls that those specialists use with your data that goes into your financial statements. So what I've done here is I've outlined some of the major areas of emphasis. I think if you take a look at these, really, none should come as a surprise when you look at your financials. Obviously, we spend a significant amount of time taking a look at disbursements, your payroll, your accounts receivable and billing. I mentioned earlier, cash and investments. Capital assets, we spend a significant amount of time, but that makes sense, right? If you look at your balance sheet, that makes up most of your balance sheet. Take a look at your debt transactions, and then again, information technology. So we performed our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. Those are the standards that we're required to follow as your audit firm. In addition, we also audit you in compliance with government auditing standards. Those are additional standards relative to my team's continuing professional education, the supervision of my audit team, quality control, due care, and our independence. So our audit objective is to obtain reasonable assurance that your financial statements are free from material misstatement. At the end of this year's audit, your financial statements have received unmodified opinion, which is also known as a clean opinion, which is the highest level that we can provide, highest level of assurance we can provide as your audit firm. Now, I mentioned we provide an opinion on your financial statements, and we talked earlier about internal controls. I do want to state, though, we do not provide an opinion on internal controls. However, when we find control breakdowns, we need to categorize those in area severity. The most severe of which would be what we call material weakness. And it's any breakdown or lack of control that would lead to more than a reasonable possibility that your financial statements could be materially misstated. And we did not identify any material weaknesses. The next categorization down, which is less severe than a material weakness, is what we call significant deficiency. It's a breakdown or lack of control that's large enough it would warrant your attention as management or as governance. And we did not identify any significant deficiencies. Now, I will say, as part of any audit engagement, we often find minor control deficiencies, or we have industry best practice recommendations, things like that, most of which would be in the information technology. So I think this year we had a couple minor IT comments, but again, nothing that would rise to the level of material or significant. So within your audit results letter, we do have that section on required communications. So one thing I want to do is just touch on and go through a couple of those highlights. One is independence. So within the profession, you'll continually hear a lot of discussion regarding auditor independence. You know, as an audit firm, can you perform consulting services? And the answer is yes, it depends. But if you do, you need to make sure that you're independent. Well, I'm here to state that our firm and every individual on the audit engagement is independent in fact and appearance. In fact, we do not perform any non-attest services for your organization. If we had any significant or unusual accounting transactions, we'd need to describe those, and this year we did not. One of the things, you know, as Michelle was going through the ACFR, one of the things, or a large section in there, are your accounting policies. An example of which would be your capitalization policy. What we need to do as auditors is make sure that those policies comply with generally accepted accounting principles, but not only that they comply, but then you also follow those policies accordingly. We often get asked when you look at those financials, what sensitive information is in there? What areas should you take particular close attention to? And I'd say it almost always has something to do with significant estimates. So much so, in fact, that we're required to point out what those are. So within your estimates, we talked about one, the accrued compensated absences liability. We also have probably your largest estimate, your net pension asset liability deferrals, and then depreciation of your fixed assets. This year, we did not identify any adjusting journal entries, and we did not have any waived adjusting journal entries as part of the audit. In addition, we had no significant findings or concerns or compliance with laws, contracts, grant agreements, nothing like that. I just know if at any time during the year or during the audit we did identify a major concern or a finding, this would not be the first time you'd be hearing about it. I'd have those conversations on a timely basis with you as oversight. So if we turn the page, if we look at fiscal 2026, this is probably the first time that I can remember in quite some time that there are no significant accounting changes. So maybe I'm speaking a little bit out of turn, but I would think this year's audit should be pretty straightforward. No major accounting changes. That should be good news. But when we look 2 years ahead, when we look into the fiscal 27, we have a couple of those. The good news is most of these are minor in nature. The 103 financial reporting model, a lot of this has to do with some additional requirements for your management discussions and analysis. It really focuses on increasing the currently known facts and decisions of your financial statements, which I think is good because readers have a significant interest in that. Also comes up with new definitions for unusual and infrequent items. If you look back, those used to be called special and extraordinary. Well, they've changed the terminologies and put those into one bucket here. And then the next thing they did is they took a look at operating and non-operating revenues and expenses, and they redefined those a little bit. So we might see some cosmetic changes on the face of your statements, reclassifying some items as operating and non-operating. But again, that's in 2 years. And then we have a change, GASB 104, disclosure of certain capital assets. Most of this is really going to affect cities, but it does affect your utilities in that it does change some note disclosures specific for, it adds a couple disclosures relative to your leases and CEBITAs. And then in addition to that, What it also does is it adds, if you have any plant infrastructure held for sale, we need to identify that within your statement. So a couple pretty simple accounting changes 2 years from now, but nothing next year, which is good. So with that, we'd like to thank everyone for all their time. Again, you know, having an audit like this, having no entries, that just doesn't happen by chance. It's definitely the work of the team. They always do a great job supporting us in our effort so we can get through the audit timely. So thanks to Michelle and Susan and everyone for all their help and support. But with that, I'll open up to any questions anyone might have.
Any questions, comments?
I have a question. Great presentation as always. Can you describe your methodology, how it has changed with new technology,
sure,
and things of that nature, and how you gather data and
yeah,
go about doing your things?
That's a good question. If I were to go back, so I've been doing this 28 years or so. Over 28 years, it's changed dramatically. If the biggest thing is, we used to have paper audit files, right, that we'd look at, which took forever. It was very cumbersome. I would say if you looked at your financial statements back then, they were probably half the size that they are now. There's been a lot of disclosures changes that have come through. You know, we went to electronic. So I'd say the biggest thing that I've seen the changes is obviously in the space of information technology, right? Controls have gotten better. Maybe if we went back, boy, might be 14 or so years ago, they had these new risk auditing standards that came out, one of which really required auditors to not only look at your financial statements and that they were materially stated, but really try to hone in a little bit, even though it's not what we do, hone in on fraud and fraud risks. So part of what they made us do is they made us have these fraud risk interviews where we interview various individuals throughout the organization to get their thoughts on fraud and fraud risks. It also made us take a look at journal entries, because journal entries, you know, one of the major risks we have is management override of controls. The biggest way they can override controls is to post a journal entry that goes outside your system, right? So it circumvents the control policy. You post an entry to change whatever account number you want. So we view that as a significant risk. Well, recently, you know, we use data analytics. We've really never used those before. So one example, when we take a look at these journal entries, we import all of them into our audit software. Our audit software data analytics will then take a look at all those, and it will really spit out, based on parameters and risk parameters that we enter, what are the high-risk entries that we as your audit firm or team should take a look at. So then we'll take a look at those, and we'll test those to make sure, one, do they have the proper independent approval, but that, again, that entry was made appropriately and has appropriate support. So I'd say data analytics, doing the same thing with your expenses when we compare year to year, that's probably one of the newer items. Now, when we turn the page and look forward, you continue to hear about artificial intelligence and AI. So I will say most firms right now aren't doing a ton with AI yet. It's mostly in the data analytics area. But most firms, and ours included, are spending a significant amount of time taking a look at, you know, how can we use AI and what technologies do we have to use to help set us up to put that audit together. The hope is, you know, it's not really going to replace the auditor. It might replace some of the simple data gathering, the mundane types of the audit that a machine can go through and quickly test thousands of transactions, as opposed to us, you know, we might test of controls, we might test 45. So it'll do that. But what it really does is it frees up even more time for your audit firm to spend in appropriate risk areas where it would require a human to do some of that testing. So looking forward, that's where we're going to see our changes. We use a lot of the things that we use right now, the ChatGPT, things like that. We can use those as research tools. For instance, your white paper, we can put a white paper on your comp absences changes. You can put it into the AI. It'll spit out and say, here's exactly what it agrees with, here's the things for future consideration. So it's kind of cool. It can do a lot of what I do, but probably even better because it continues to pull almost every data source possible. But that's, for instance, a change. Years ago, we would have never had that tool to run that through. I would have had to do it all myself, and which we still give attention to it. But it's amazing how much is going to change going forward.
No, thank you. That was exactly where I was hoping to hear.
Any other questions or comments?
I would like to ask a question about
sure.
Baker Tilly as an entity.
Sure.
And it makes me wondering, in your corporate world,
mm-hmm.
because now we have gone so much away from paper and paper things, and y'all even kind of made that comment coming up about the paper. More is online. What might Baker Tilly have, if anything, ecological? For all the paper that's used, did Baker Tilly plant a tree somewhere?
Oh,
or, I know that's
our sustainability,
simplification,
no,
in consideration.
Yeah, and we get a lot of questions on this. So one thing, if you want to see the complete listing, if you went to our website, we actually have a sustainability that talks through all that, of all the things that we do, like all of our offices incorporate, since you know our group is very specific to energy and power and utilities, that we have smaller office prints, we use solar, you know, everything we have in there, you know, geothermal, there's all these different types of renewable resources that we use as part of that. You know, that's a big part that you'll see in there. You know, certainly the reduction of paper, we rarely use any paper anymore. You know, do we plant trees? That part I'm not sure of.
it was a simple
decision. No, agree. But no, our firm definitely takes great strides and definitely considers sustainability important. And probably my group even more importantly, just because of the work that we do and the renewable energy engagements that we work on with our utilities. But again, if you want to see a complete list of detail, you just go on our website, Google sustainability, and they got a nice narrative that puts all that together. But I think, you know, the biggest bangs for the buck are within those office, those footprints. We're doing more hoteling. So we don't need the big, huge offices that we used to have before.
Thank you. So
yeah.
I will go on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm sure you said this when you did your original proposal, but I'll be honest, I've forgotten.
Yeah.
How many total employees and how many offices do y'all have?
So if you recall last year, effective June 1st this year, we had a change. We brought in a major partner. So Moss Adams is now
right.
part of Baker Tilly. So that really doubled our size as a firm. So we're now, I believe, depending on the day, the sixth largest. We have 1,000 partners. I think we have 4,000 to 5,000 employees. It's getting bigger. We have offices in pretty much every region. We have a lot of offices in California, Texas. You know, we have our Austin office, which is now up to 150 people, most of which are remote employees. But if you recall, probably 8-9 years ago, we started that. Myself and another partner came down and. Started with 2 or 3 of us, and now we have up to 150 mergers in that as well. But it's to see the growth, just as an aside, so our firm started, I think it was like 1931, in a little town called Waterloo, Wisconsin. Just a couple sole proprietors, and since that time it's grown to be, number 6 in the country, which is crazy. When I started, it was called Virtual Krause. We had a name rebrand, many, many, many mergers throughout that. You know, one question I often get asked is, you know, Aaron, considering the growth of your organization and all the different offices and 1,000 partners, how can we ensure that we're independent? How do I know that someone in Houston hasn't done an engagement, whether it be benefit plan or financial advisory or rate study, anything? How can I as a partner know that when I go through our audit? So one of the things we've utilized technology is everything runs through our database and system. So anytime there's a project, I as a lead audit partner will get an email that says, hey, Caitlin Hummerkaus is doing a a financial staffing engagement, or executive comp study. Aaron, take a look at that. You need to vet it for independence before we approve it. So the good news is we can rely on technology to keep us all, or at least keep me ahead of knowing what's being proposed out there, what are we doing, making sure that we have independence. But yeah, the organization has definitely grown.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
We have one more. You just mentioned relying on technology.
Yeah.
You had said something about minor IT comments.
Sure.
Well, can you look?
Sure. So one of the things that we do, I'd say most often, there's, to split this into two different things, you know, we have the actual control, right? But then there's also, is the control formally documented? Do you have a formal process? And is that process not only documented, but the approval piece is documented as well? So one of the, I think we had two, and they were all had to do with, well, one was user access. So it's not to say that user access isn't being reviewed. What we're recommending is make sure you develop a formal process for the user access reviews. Two in particular is for your Active Directory, and the other is for TruePoint, I believe. So documenting what that is, and then making sure that the reviews of that are documented as well. So I don't want to say it's not taking place, but what I would do is formalize what that approval should look like, the cadence, how often should that occur, and then the approval where we can see, yep, this was done on this date. The other has to do with, again, it's user account management termination. So when you terminate an employee, you know, documenting the formalized procedures for that, but then the review that the access that that terminated employee had has been taken away in deprovision. So it's looking at the access provisioning and then deprovisioning, how your employees get access to the system, and then how they get that removed, the timeliness, again, things like that. So I don't want to make it seem like these things aren't being done, but we would like to see a formalization of the process, I think, more than anything. Does that capture?
Yeah. Do you guys require, what is it called? Two-factor authentication.
So we do it. We do it our firm, and we would definitely recommend it. I swear, some days I feel like it's triple or quadruple authentication. But you can imagine, since it's not our data, it's probably even more important that we do that. But I think it's a great idea. You know, when governing bodies are often asking, "What's the biggest risk to the organization?" It's going to be cybersecurity, right?
Yeah.
And that changes constantly. So much so, in fact, that just having one login isn't sufficient anymore. Someone could easily get that password. As we've seen, there's been data breaches, but that dual is really nice. It gets kicked to your phone. You're able to do it that way. So I don't know if I'd say it's a requirement, but I definitely think it's a great idea.
It's encouraged. We do, and as of today, you all will as well to access convene. That's the last agenda item, is to set you up with multi-factor.
Yeah.
So y'all will be doing it too.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Anything else?
I was just going to, we've got Susan Avalon, our controller, and David Jones, our senior accountant, and I can't take any credit for this. They do all the heavy lifting. Susan came in, David's been here 2 years.
Two years.
A fairly new employee. Susan's been here over 1 year, and she came in on the heels of an employee who had been here over 20 years and took over the audit, and we didn't miss a beat. So I can't say enough. Thank you.
Great.
Both very
congratulations.
Much. So, yeah. For this meeting, this is just a report item. In the board meeting, there will actually be a resolution to approve it.
Okay. So we don't need to approve the resolution.
I should echo Michelle's comments. So she's exactly right. You know, you had a lot of institutional knowledge walk up, you know, even with David and Matt over these years. But I don't want it to get lost on the fact that when I said it was a straightforward year, it very well couldn't have been. Like, so we go into many organizations when they do have significant turnover at Susan's level, and it is not a straightforward year. Audit gets delayed. You know, we find control issue just because of the transition. And this year we didn't. Had we not have worked with those individuals, we would have never known that there was a major change. So again, great job.
If there's not any other information, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We're done.